Lord, we thank you that you're a good father. Thank you that you give us grace and courage, and you sustain us in our spirits. We just pray, Lord, that this afternoon would be a continuation of blessing. Open our hearts to understanding. I pray that all of us could know that you have a plan for us, and that your goal is, your desire as our Father, is that we could live profitable lives here, as Jesus said, occupy till I come, and that we would have an established eternal life with Jesus. In the name of Jesus, we ask this. Amen. Well, I hope you enjoyed your relaxing, comfortable lunch, and that you're ready to get back into the next session. I like quotes. Often I read quotes throughout, and this time I just compiled them. Here's a quote I like. Unless there is within us that which is above us, we shall soon yield to that which is about us. If we're not filled with power from on high, we give in to the surroundings very quickly. I talked about needing a paradigm shift. If we don't, the mind justifies what the heart has chosen. We logically explain ourselves to be able to live whatever lifestyle we want. The mind justifies what the heart has chosen. Christianity must mean everything to us before it can mean anything to others. And then what I mentioned last night, learn to say no. It will be of more use to you than being able to read Latin. I'm going to continue this one as a continuation. There we go. Over the years, I found myself often making a comment. If somebody wanted to join our family or come spend the weekend with us or maybe live with us, I would just say, well, if you're willing to become part of the wheel, we'll just crank you along with everybody else. And occasionally someone said, Freeman, what does that mean? And one day our deacon, Tim Croft, he said, Freeman, can you tell me what that wheel looks like? And I was driving out to the office one day, and I said, you know, there's got to be a way to create a diagram for what I've been attempting to live and teach for many years. I sat down at my desk and spent about 20 minutes with my word picture coming out on paper. So it's obviously not perfected. And I'm sure some of you could do this on a computer with bits and pieces coming in at the right time, different colors, lights flashing, which would make it way more interesting. I haven't gotten beyond a marker on a whiteboard. But I'd like to describe to you what it means and why this is so foundational to me. What it means when the Apostle Paul says, bring up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And he gives that to us as if he expects us to do it. My suggestion is this. If you want to take the responsibility that I believe the Lord has placed on us as parents, then you need to make it the priority that God has put on it himself. If you're working a job and your family's livelihood is dependent on that job, and your boss comes to you and says, if you don't make these changes, you're going to lose your job, you make those changes. You're like my family. We've got addicted to food. People have asked me sometimes, why do your children work so hard? And I tell them, they got addicted to food. You're going to change what you have to keep your job. And particularly if there is no other job to have. We've read many stories about the Great Depression back in the 30s in the United States. And what has impressed me and touched me so deeply is how some of these family men would do hard manual labor that almost destroyed them. And they would go to great lengths to keep that job, because if they lost that job, there was 500 men waiting in line to take that job from them. There were no options except your family starving and standing in the bread line, which may or may not have been sufficient. And if you wanted to keep your family alive, which is a high priority amongst most parents, you want to keep your family alive, you say, I will do what it takes to make this work. When our granddaughter it was discovered that she had leukemia, her parents didn't say, well, give me 6 months to see what we come up with. Probably if they'd have waited 3 weeks, they'd have buried her. We seem to understand the medical emergencies in a way that we never understand the spiritual emergencies. What I want to do now, and I'm just going to warn you up front, this is the sermon when people start wondering, should they call Freeman back again? Most parents do not follow what I'm teaching this afternoon. Most parents believe, I will be the exception, and my children don't need something like what's being represented. And then when they find out they weren't the exception, they say, at least they love Jesus. Which may be true, but it's not sustainable for the future generations at all. Jesus said, you're my friends if you obey me. So, again, my simple way of thinking, let's bring it up at least to a third grade level. That has to mean something, right? It means that if we disobey Jesus, then we're walking disobedience. And we want to walk in the love and blessing of our Father, not because we're perfect, but because we, just like a three-year-old, loves his daddy. We love our daddy. And there's nothing more than we want to know that we're bringing recognition to our Father in heaven. In the middle of this circle, I'll try this blue marker. I say it was a failure. Let me see if this is better. In the middle of the circle, I wrote living Jesus. And I'm not referring to the fact that Jesus is living. He's our living, risen Lord and Savior. I've been asked over the years, I said, Freeman, how do you explain this? And I say, well, it's just simple as you live Jesus. Jesus within you has to flow out somehow. This tiny circle here, let's just say that's the very core of our value system. Let me tell you how powerful this wheel is. I want to change this. I used to wonder, how did the little ISIS children over in Iraq and Syria, how could you take 6, 8, and 10-year-olds that could watch someone be doused with gasoline, burning in a cage, and they'd be hooting and hollering like a circus? How do you create children with that type of value system? How do the Muslims recreate little Muslims? How do the atheists recreate little atheists? And as I started studying that, I thought, you know what? They use the exact same principles I use. The only difference is the atheists are much more diligent in this than the average Christian is. Do you know why? Christians believe in the Holy Spirit. And so we shouldn't force the issue because God is the one that draws people to Him. The Holy Spirit needs to draw people and guide people. Jesus said the Comforter will come and teach you all things. In Peter, I believe, where it says that the grace of God teaches you how to deny ungodliness. So if I, as a parent, bring this to my children, I'm short-circuiting the Holy Spirit. Even the atheists don't buy into that. The Muslims by no means buy into that. ISIS works this system to the very hilt. All I'm saying is those people groups have figured out what shapes a child. Remember the Spartans of old used to say, you give me a child for 7 years and he will be a soldier for life. Well, I think it was at 7 years old they had to join the military or whatever that system was. Learn to steal, learn to survive, learn to be heroes in their own. It worked. Their nation was a powerful nation because they understood what shapes a child. I'm a firm believer, first of all, in the saving power of Jesus Christ. But I'm also, as I look around, if the ones that just believe that God draws us, God protects us, God keeps us, the conclusion has to be that God's grace is geographically challenged. You go out into the country, morals are much higher than in the inner city. You go to certain countries across the world, evidently God's grace is not available there because not many people love Him. But you come to the Bible Belt, you come to a group where the gospel's been spread and people are responding. What this means is God's grace is not designed to work independently of the messengers and ambassadors. And we as parents have to believe that we are ambassadors in that sense to shape and train these children. So, establishing that if you want, there's a verse in Proverbs that many of us have used. Train up a child the way he should go, when he's old, he should not depart from it. I don't know what all that verse means. If it means that you can guarantee your child's eternal destiny, then it would also mean you have to be a perfect parent to guarantee that. I wasn't able to train my children perfectly in the way they should go. So I guess that verse isn't a promise to me. But I do think what it means, if we train up our children well, what shapes them is what they become in almost every situation. And again, that's a general principle. It's not a promise in that sense. People tend to hold to it as a promise. Parents with wayward children hang on to that verse. I think that's a misnomer for that verse. So here we have living Jesus, your core value system. And I'm drawing this out based on the fact that we're in love with Jesus and that our goal is to bring Jesus to our children. Outside this circle, we have mom and dad. So this is mom and dad's core value system. Next, I put life principles. And it took me several years to figure out what order to put this. Next, I put life principles. Next, we have spiritual principles. And if there's someone here that believes the spiritual principles are more important, I'm okay with that. But if you negate the life principles, it's probably lost. And again, think about this. How many children have grown up with strong spiritual preaching, teaching, and have thrown it all away and are living for the devil? I'm becoming a believer that what shapes a child the most is him learning cheerful obedience, living without condemnation, having a clear conscience, and knowing the value comes from Jesus. That is, so let's say you take a home that lives free of guilt and condemnation. And at some point they learn about God, and there's no conflict within themselves about who God is. Maybe they didn't have the spiritual teaching that would have been healthy, but they have a clear conscience, and they can easily connect with God and understand that God is a good father, and they move on into their trust in God, and they're very secure. Let's say you take a child that has had a lot of spiritual teaching, but there's conflict within. The spiritual teaching comes from the parents of the church, and they will react to where it's coming from and walk away from it because they believe Jesus brings conflict and condemnation and guilt because that's what they grew up with. And once you get that down, you'll start understanding what actually drives the child to the finished product. So we have what mom and dad believe, life principles, spiritual principles. And then we have environment. The environment of things that are outside the home, even within the home. It could be your school, your church, your job. There's a lot of things, your neighborhood, a lot of things that bring in the environment. Okay. Now I'm going to start drawing children. Here's where I wish I had a different color marker. Let me try to make a double line. I understand that you can tell how good an artist someone is by how well a circle he can draw. Once at a couple's night. This points more at me than my wife. Some of these silly games they play at couples night, I don't quite get into it. But whoever planned the games wanted us as husbands to draw a picture of our wife. And then we all lay the pictures out on the table, and then the wives come by and choose their picture. And I'm thinking, me draw a picture that's recognizable? So I took my paper and drew a stick figure. Emily picked it right out. She said, Freeman's the only one that would have done that. Mission accomplished. I know where my limitations are. Here's another child. So here we have two children now. Tell you what, let's do three. So we have three children. There's a lot of factors in life. Let's just say here, maybe this is dad's character. This could be mom's character as individuals, not as a couple. Over here may be your church. Here you've got friends. Let's see, over here you have cousins. Here's your hobbies. Here could be work, which could be a home business, or it could be jobs around the house, whatever it may be. But I think you get the picture. There's a lot of things that, so you end up with a wheel that has spokes where it looks like a pie. What you notice, every single one of these goes to the very center. So let's say this child here, this child is being shaped. Let's say your goal as a parent is to shape this child into the image of Jesus. So it's very important to you because you love Jesus. Remember, many parents that love Jesus lose their children. This will help you understand why that often happens. You love Jesus. Your love for Jesus goes through how well mom and dad live it out. It goes through how well you've trained them. It goes through their spiritual teaching. It goes through the environment till finally it gets to the child. And so by the time your child actually absorbs what you believe about Jesus, it's like it's gone through about 3 or 4 or 5 filters. Does that make sense? And so let's say dad is an angry dad, but he honestly loves Jesus. He's definitely born again, and he's faithful in going to church, but he has an anger issue he hasn't dealt with. So his love for Jesus goes through mom and dad, through the times that he was harsh with them in training. Maybe he beat them for breaking the vehicle window, but just said, hey, chewed him out for playing when he wasn't supposed to. Next time you might have ignored it. So what that child believes about Jesus is filtered by all of that. Or let's say dad wants to train the children, but he lives with a wife that constantly comes in and controls him. That's filtered through that. And so what we find, the environment that your child finds himself in, all of this, significantly impacts this child. And so you think you're talking to the child about Jesus. When the child sees through the glasses of your character, of the training, of the spiritual teaching, of the friends. So let's say you take the child to church. You're sitting there praising the Lord. Thank you, Lord. Amen. And that child is thinking, that's not what it's like at home. Or you have friends over, and you've taught your child about Jesus, and then the friend brings in something counter to what you're teaching, and your 6-year-old, 8-year-old is saying, okay, Daddy told me this is what's true, but my friends are saying it's not true. Well, what I want to illustrate there, environment significantly shapes a child. Even if we believe that, seldom do parents guard that as closely as they do their jobs. our financial empire, based on our response, is more important than the spiritual well-being of our children. Few of us are willing to make the changes needed. So let's say you're a caring father, and you're a workaholic, and God convicts you of that. So you start spending more time with the children, but the time you spent with the children, you're grumbling about all the carnality in the church and other fathers that are workaholics and amassing wealth while you're the spiritual one, and you feel like you're struggling. We've just shot ourselves in the foot. So the child saying, okay, Dad is following God to spend time with us, and he's turned into a cynical, critical person. I wish he'd go back to work. So you take him to church, and the church has ongoing. We've had several families move in recently that were through at least three church crashes by the time they came to ours. You think those young people are interested in church? There's one in particular. We all smile about it now. When they first moved, maybe 3 years ago, I was an elder in our church. If I walked into a room, are you familiar with those little Scotty dogs, those little magnets? To where the magnets push each other away. Or if you turn around, they draw each other together. If I walked into a room, it's like there was an imaginary pole between us. He would drift out the other side. Like I couldn't, it was humorous to watch it. If I came in and sat down, he got up and just kind of ghosted out and went upstairs or went outside. I never did anything to that boy. I mean, I couldn't even talk to him. Like, I never threw anything at him. I never did anything to him. But I couldn't get close to him. I still remember the first time he called me up and said, Freeman, can I stop at your office and talk to you for a bit? And by then, he had given his heart to the Lord, and he was really wanting to be a disciple. And I remember him sitting there at the desk with just an open countenance, having honest, frank conversations. And I'm thinking, a year ago, I couldn't have got him in here if I'd have tried. I mean, if I'd have hog-tied him and drug him in, I could have talked to him, but he'd have been screaming inwardly. And here he contacted me to come in and sit at my desk. Church impacts our children. I want to encourage you with this. It is possible for our children to grow up in a less than ideal environment and still love the Lord. Our family should have been a statistic. I saw men stronger than I lose their families. I'm just so grateful for the grace of God for keeping us during our difficult years. What happens, we as fathers, since we don't trust the church, since we're afraid of the church, since churches are where so many people get hurt, as soon as we see some rumblings, again, we remove our family and we draw a really dark line around us, not let anybody else in, and we don't realize that not submitting one to another creates an independence that destroys our children. And so we create our own little circle somewhere, and we're not about to let anybody else in. What happens then? I mean, how many of you fathers are completely balanced and perfect just by yourself? We have one. Can we trade places? He said it was a false vote. That tight circle often keeps outside value from coming in and does not bring the balance for the inward negatives. within this circle, there has to be value. Remember, children go where the value is. That's pretty well a given. They go where the value is. If the value is not in here, as soon as they can break away, they break out. Within this protective circle, your children need to be well socialized. And you say, well, Freeman, how can they be? Because you just said we can't let anything negative in and everybody else carries some negative. It's like my family is the only one that isn't sniffing the negative, so what do I do? Well, let's just say you find yourself head and shoulders above everybody else, and that you know that you're the spiritual one and nobody else is. If you create this, your children grow up at best very arrogant, feeling they're the only ones with the answers, which again is very destructive, very, very prideful. Let's say you believe, like I've taught here earlier, in the local body. So we're not running away from the local body. We're trying to understand. It sounds like a contradiction. We're trying to understand how to survive in the local body. We're trying to understand how do we survive with the model God gave us. On the assumption that you're a diligent mom and dad, not perfect, but diligent, and you understand that things that come in will shape, here's your child, things that come in will shape your child. And so let's say you invite a family over from the less spiritual crowd, and you'll find out that they have spiritual attributes that you don't, and you'll find out that, wow, we need each other after all. But with that, remember the story I gave about the spiritual ordained minister sitting in my living room, too spiritual to go out and play with the children. One of them lost all 7 of his children, and the other one's family is divided, some in like deep sin and others, lots of confusion there. That's just one example, and I give the example over and over and over. In our personal experience, it's not as much about that you can't let anybody in this circle, but there has to be a level of respect for the ones that you bring in. So let's say we invite someone in that is willing to openly discourage our children from following what mom and dad believe. We don't allow those into the circle. Let's say we invite a family that may be at a different place than we are. Maybe they don't understand obedience. You can invite a family like that in, but we as moms and dads need to stay with them, or an older sibling be with them. For example, we've had families at our place and in our church that were absolutely not doing well. Maybe even some immorality, stealing, lying, deception. If my children were secure about who Jesus was based on mom and dad, life principles, spiritual principles, if they were secure in that, if they trusted me as guiding them, if someone did tell them something different, they would say, hey, Dad, this is what he said. What do you think about that? The trust was there. The confidence was there. You have to have your children's hearts for this to work. If you don't have your children's hearts, pretend that your job is at stake and that you're about to get fired and that you better do something to keep your job. If you don't have your children's hearts, you need to win your children's hearts. Probably your children can tell you what needs to be done better than anybody else can tell you. Now, if they say, well, if I had a new car, if I had a new house, if I had a horse, that's not what I'm talking about. Children get confused on some of those values sometimes. But in reality, I've spent lots of time with troubled children, and almost without fail, what they talk about, I just need to know Dad loves me. Dad doesn't spend time with me. Or if I do say something, he cuts me off right away. Or I don't think he really listens to what I have to say. it's not about things. It's not about your level of income. It's about investment into the value of your children. So let's say you bring someone in and you know the children are not safe, so to speak. If your children's hearts are knit with your heart, you can actually bring that family in, and we've done it dozens of times over the years, but you stay with them. You don't let them go farther than what they're mature enough to emotionally process. And so, let's just say there's a family with you, whether you know it or not, may have a history of, it could be vulgar language, it could be maybe some porn got in the home, it could be incest. In some ways, those issues are not important. That's not the deciding factor. The deciding factor is, are you able to be with them enough to know that those issues will not damage your children? In the age of technology, it's become like 1,000 times more complicated. Because you can be with what you believe is a safe children, and someone's got a hidden phone, someone's got a hidden card, and they can be in incredibly destructive places in a couple seconds. That's where the trust has to be there. You have to build the trust with your children. And I'm not suggesting that every family is able to build that trust. What I'm saying is, the higher the level of trust, the greater the possibility of your children accepting the values that you're teaching them. The lower the level of trust, the lower that possibility. And if we feel this is absolutely important, then we're going to make it the absolute priority. So let's say, what do you do if friends and church is the same thing? Let's say you have a family from church. What do we do? I have a question for you. Let's say you have your own business. Some of you here, I think, have your own businesses. And you know that your livelihood is based on customers' trust in your business. How many of you would hire an employee that you know would steal you blind and send them to a customer's house on their own to do a job? And then you get a phone call from the customer saying, hey, my jewelry drawer is empty. Or I had a four-wheeler in the garage and it's gone. Or I had an expensive painting on the wall. What happened? And say, oh, I'm not responsible. That was my employee. So then you go to another job, the same thing happens. You go to another job, the same thing happens. Google is going to start picking that up, folks. And someone reviews you, and all these negative customer reviews are coming on there, and you're going to find all of a sudden you're not getting jobs anymore. You know what I'm saying? How many of you would do that year after year after year? I'm not seeing any raises of hands on this one. So let's say you're an employee working for somebody. And you know that the image of the company is what keeps your job. Let's just say you're doing a remodel job in someone's house when they're living there. Okay, so you take a guy off the street and say, hey, I need to teach you about Jesus, and I'm mentoring you, so I'm going to take you to work with me today. And he's in there cursing, cussing, just creating a scene. You wouldn't do that because it would ruin your reputation as a businessman. But let me tell you what you would do. Based on Anabaptist history, if it was a cousin, you'd say it's just fine. If it was an uncle or an aunt or a grandfather or a grandmother or a brother or sister, did you know in the Anabaptist world, DNA makes the difference? We have had to go cross current in the Anabaptist system in an incredible way to understand what we're doing here. I have watched whole cousin groups turn away from God and get into immorality, and they continued getting together on a regular basis. They'd have never let the neighbor, but an Easter nephew. We can't miss Christmas. We can't miss Thanksgiving. Let me tell you something, folks. What I'm teaching you has cost our family more than I can describe. The sheer energy and focus. Emma and I both come from basically good, stable, Christian. A lot of our siblings, nieces and nephews, are good influences. Even with that, we live this principle. I just remember traveling out to Kansas where Emily's family was, and it warmed my heart to have my nieces and nephews come to me and say, can we take your children along to a youth gathering? We're going to do this, 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 this. They knew exactly what my questions were going to be, and I never even had to ask them. And I'd say, sure, I'm okay with that. They didn't violate anything. Plus, I could trust my children at that point. But let's say they would have been drag racing, which a lot of Anabaptist youth do that. Or they'd have been going to the movies. Or they'd have been just ripping around disrespectful conversations about their parents. I mean, if I want to send my children on the mission field to evangelize, yes, I do some of that. But not as a comfortable integration. The light and darkness has to be clear in your children's minds. Otherwise, it dulls their conscience and confuses the values. I'll tell you how this works. We have an adopted daughter that spends time with her biological family. And the fact that she's adopted tells you there's some needs in the larger family. We work this principle all the way through. Here's how it works. Here's your youngest child. Here's your second child. Here's your third child. The simple solution is you keep them as close, okay, you let them go as far as the trust is built. And the more trust, the more maturity, not just trust, but maturity, the more ability to make decisions in complex situations, the farther they can go from home. The idea is not to keep me in mind until they're 30 years old. The idea is to create hardened, mature soldiers to send out at a young age. And that young age isn't necessarily going to be 15, 16, but maybe in 20, 22, 25. And so as that child matures and the trust is built and the values are solid, they can go farther. So let's say as your children get older, they go farther and farther. But they're always tied to the very heart of what mom and dad believe. And I'm finding that these principles actually work regardless of your background, regardless of what ethnic background you come from or church background you come from, if you're actually allowed to work these principles. And most children, either they're young enough, let's say 15 years old and younger, or they're pliant enough that they're willing to bend their hearts to the will of God so they could be older than that, you can bring them into this circle. Let's say some of the times we took a new young person in, we just expected they were lying, they were cheating, they were stealing, they were dishonest. Cheating is kind of dishonest, right? That was a given. So we bring him into the circle, and there's virtually no contact with the outside world. No phone, no friends, even church families not coming in. And I'll tell you, this is why. Let's say you take someone that's addicted to the emotional highs. It could be from social media, but it could also be just the hanging out at Starbucks late at night and ripping around in town and just all the emotional highs, they feed on that. you bring them into a safe environment, they have to like detox. So even too much of a good thing can spike their emotions. And you want to bring the child to where his emotions are steady and stable. Our children missed out on a lot of the important Anabaptist events because we were after building character and socializing him well. That's why we brought the publicans and the sinners into our home, socialized them very well. And as we brought church events in, we might have had a church picnic at our house. Our children had lots of activity going on, too much activity almost. But a lot of it was character building, ministry focused, and they had a lot of fun growing up. Hard work, yes. They were learning to be hardened soldiers. I remember when Justin went to St. Juan, he probably acclimated better than virtually anybody there because it was just normal life as usual. Sacrificial, hard life because we're followers of Jesus. As that child within your home stabilizes, whether it's your own 5-year-old or someone else's 15-year-old, as they stabilize, trust is built. You let them go farther. Sure enough, they make a mistake. But for the first time in that young person's life, let's say you have somebody that has grown up with a guilty conscience, and you clear that conscience. You put them in a circle. This is what I tell them. I said, we're going to stay in this circle, and within that circle, I trust you completely. What I don't say is the reason I trust them is I can see all the way across. Within that circle, trust is complete. Maybe they've never been trusted before. Maybe your children haven't been trusted before. You don't just say, I'm going to trust you, so I'm going to let you go to a volleyball game that you know is negative. That's not trust. That's foolishness. That's taking a derelict with you to work that ruins your reputation. Trust is not based on just a blind choice. Trust is based on the history that we have. And so within that circle, trust is built. And that child suddenly understands the value of being trusted. I've had several tell me, said, I have never been trusted before in my life. This feels good. And then they do something wrong. And the cloud comes across their countenance. And the fear. And then you clear that again. And the trust is back. I had a young man from church. He did something very foolish that affected my family. I sat down with him and had a conversation that he could understand. And it wasn't harsh, but he could understand it. At the end, tears rolling down his face, he said, Freeman, I've never had this before. He said, at home, I'd have to pay for this for weeks. To where I felt my dad was angry at me and I didn't feel my dad's blessing. We cleared it up. We made a commitment. And I told him, I looked him straight in the eye. He was probably 17 years old. And I said, I will choose to trust you. And he just wept. Do you know today, he's one of the married men that will randomly stop into my office just to tell me he loves me. A couple weeks ago, I was back in the storage room and I saw this shadow of a bulk behind me. I had my head in the freezer, so I wasn't aware of my surroundings, which is not a really good thing to be caught in. And I turned around and here he was standing there. And he looked very focused because he's a very busy man. And this was like maybe 6 weeks ago. And he said, Freeman, I just stopped in to tell you I love you and thank you for being my pastor. And he threw his arms around me, gave me a bear hug, and he turned around and marched out the door and kept on driving down the road. That's all he wanted. Could have at least bought some food, right? Which, he does that on a frequent basis as well. That's the same young man that betrayed my trust. And he knew it. And I was able to look him straight in the eye and said, son, I will trust you until you prove otherwise. Free of condemnation. Children go where the value is. This young man had a lot of environment that pulled him a lot of different places besides where he is today. He kept coming back to the value, coming back to the value, coming back to the value. His situation wasn't perfect. He had a lot of reasons for becoming discouraged about the church. He went through the church meltdown. He went through other hard times. Let me ask you, why is he the one that loves me the most? Do you know your child will do the same thing if you do the same thing? Do you believe that? The confusing thing is if these other things come in and it confuses what we're explaining about Jesus. I'm going to say some hard things. Some of you are familiar with Music Camp in Harrisonburg. How many of you are familiar with the Music Camp? Great place to go to learn about music. It's also a great place to learn about what I call the departing culture of the Anabaptists. Not everybody that's in Music Camp is part of that culture, but some of them are. This is what I discovered. It's not the derelicts in the community that are destroying my children. It's the liberal Anabaptists that are destroying my children. Think about that. Our daughter loved music. She did not go to the music camp until she was stable enough to handle the diversity. When I actually allowed her to go, I had some friends come to me and said, "So, you feel better about the Mennonites now?" And I just smiled and said, "It reinforced what I believe." She came back stronger in her convictions because she saw firsthand, she didn't even know that world existed. Can you imagine that? We lived in Amherst, Virginia, walking on the edge of hell every day. She would go into lesbians' home. We had some friends at the ice cream parlor, and she befriended some that were in a terrible situation. She would go into these broken homes and did not even know that liberal departing culture existed. Do you know why? Because I believed that could be confusing. We didn't go to all the popular Anabaptist things. You know I'm a black sheep in some parts. It doesn't make you popular. But I'm going to tell you something. Someday, I will stand before Jesus and give account. Not for what the liberal ones have done, but for what I have done. And I am responsible for the souls that God has entrusted to me. We had a situation that was very close to us with a family that disrespected our values. They came in and slandered me to the ones in our household. We drew lines strong enough to split a church apart. It didn't split the church apart, but many churches it would have. And I said, I will not knowingly, not saying I'm perfect, I will not knowingly on my watch allow poison to come in and poison who Jesus is and that influence what children believe. We have paid a high price for that. I've found most parents aren't willing to do that, and I'm going to prove it with this. Most of us send our children before they're mature enough to handle the diversity to Bible schools. We opted not to. My daughter at 16 or 17 finally got to go to a Bible school. And she was so happy, felt so mature, only to her chagrin found out her dad was sleeping right across the hallway. Now, when Christy, our oldest daughter, due to my neglect, ended up in an emotional tangle, and I brought her into this circle and said, I will personally know every single thing that goes on. I will read every letter. I will know every phone call. I will know every conversation. She said, it's fun. I'm not going to give in. And then we came upon some things that meant a lot to her. Let me tell you this. Let me tell you what transparency does, because that's all she ever knew. So she couldn't even hide her rebellion. She did for a while because I was neglected, not because she was so good at hiding. We had a communion service at church, and she said, Dad, I'm obviously disconnected from you, which is means I'm rebellious, so should I participate in communion? And we looked at the scriptures of what communion is for, and I'm one that strongly believes that communion is celebrating what Jesus had done, not celebrating our perfection. I know there's different views on that. And I told her, I said, Christy, I'm going to leave it up to you. Here's the scriptures. If you're openly being hypocritical, I think it's a negative. You drink damnation to yourself. We read those scriptures. We read about the beauty of being loved by God even when we're struggling. At 15 that night, and I didn't know what she was going to do. I said, Christy, I'm going to leave it up to you. Now, I didn't let her out of the circle, but I let her make that decision. At the communion service, completely on her own, when we kind of opened it up and wanted to say something, she said, I'd like for y'all to pray for me because I'm rebellion to my dad. And she said, I believe I should not participate in communion until I work through this. 15 years old. Then there came an issue that I told her, I said, if you do this, you will obviously be looking like a hypocrite, so I'm going to have to say no. And she started weighing the cost of her sin. And she broke. And she surrendered her heart, and it was beautiful. The next 2 years, she did not get outside of the circle. The circle, as in being with me close enough that I could see all the way across. I realized I had neglected her badly, which caused some flaws in the foundation. And I was committed to rebuilding that foundation. And we didn't do it perfectly. But for probably the next 2 years, which is a long time in a 15, 16, 17-year-old's life, Christy and I got to know each other quite well. And then when we opened the ice cream parlor, we worked together at work on a regular basis. We bonded like few father daughters do. And the trust that was built was incredible. She had friends that she loved dearly. I'm the one that made the decision, are they positive or negative? And I talked about it with her. She had input. It wasn't like I was functioning like a dictator. I just said, inside this circle, you've got a lot of freedom. Outside the circle, we ask the Lord for wisdom on every inch of the way. So any new person that came to our house that knew they were going to be put in the circle, Christy would say, I understand. I understand. Just make it as short as possible because you don't want to stay into the not trusted part longer than you have to. I've shared this with some of you. Due to that, there's two criticisms. I'd say two of the strongest criticisms that we receive. One is that I am way too restrictive. Like, I did not let my children go to Bible schools unless they were mature enough to handle the negative influences. And for a charity church to do that, for a charity elder to do that, it's not popular, trust me. We did not go to family gatherings unless we were along and we felt it's going to be positive or they were stable and mature enough. We didn't go to church families. We didn't, it's like that was the rule we lived by. You could easily think that's strict. But then we do things like Justin going to China when he was 18. The first year after Justin was born again, it took him a while to get on his feet. But I remember going to him and say, Justin, I've arranged to where there's a good solid brother that's going to China for 3 weeks. And understanding the China trip, you pass out literature at night, skip town to stay ahead of the police, sleep during the day, pass out literature at night, skip town, and it's a constant running. And it was like a great vacation. I mean, he stumbled in a sewer once, fell over a yak one time, ate peanuts and noodles for 3 weeks, like absolutely grueling. But I remember when I told him that I'd like to arrange for him to go to China, I remember he looked at me and said, so you do mean what you said, that you're willing to put value on it and trust me as I'm a tour. But it didn't remove it from this. He stayed within arm's length of a trusted brother. So I could trust him within that. But going to China was a big deal for a young, adventurous world traveler. Wanted to be a world traveler. That was a huge step. Or, okay, so the one accusation is, Freeman, you're way too restrictive. Your children are going to be narrow-minded. They don't have freedom. They'll just grow up depending on you. The other accusation was, is we don't have any rules. We're sitting on our porch with a family who is constantly hollering at their children, don't do this, don't do that, stop hitting, stop beating, stop pinching, get off that fence, don't ride that bicycle. And our children, Ryan being, I don't know, he was probably 5 at the time, just past the terrible twos, by no means supposed to be stable. He's ripping around the yard having a high time, staying within his boundaries. And they finally looked at me, and I heard this over and over. He said, we have all the rules, and our children don't listen for anything. You don't have any rules, but they always do what you want them to do. And again, I know he looks perfect. He actually isn't. But let me tell you something. We had a heart connection, and there was a trust there from little up. We would have friends over that would make your blood curdle. Like the gothic girls that actually communicated with the devil. Christy was driving her car once and heard a bang on the outside of the window. And the girls just giggled and said, whoops, he hit the window. There actually seemed to be demons. Those girls did sleepovers at our house. We'd be playing ping pong after Sunday lunch. I'm just going to tell you. I found it safer to walk on the very edge of hell with your family than to integrate them into the departing culture of the Anabaptists. And that's a hard statement for someone like me to make. Very hard. Like it's very painful. My goal was to teach him the accuracy of who Jesus is. Our sons, especially the older three, they walked hundreds of miles giving horse rides to out-of-control children. That's one thing you'd have liked. Let's say your family's completely out of control. You'd have loved coming to our house. We had a swing that was tied to a branch 42 feet up in the air. Swung like you wouldn't believe. We had horses. We had horseshoes. We had 1,000 feet of covered porch. And it was so much value. I had to be careful not to burn out our children ministry to where we had to have a reprieve sometimes. And once our children got married, they all took a break. They were like missionaries needing furloughs. What did one of them tell me recently? He said if a missionary takes a furlough every so many years, that means he needed about a 3-year break after he was married to do the catch up of the furloughs that he didn't get. We made choices like not sending our children to the normal Bible schools unless they were stable, not sending them to the normal volleyball games unless we were along or they were stable, not doing the normal things. But at the same time, our family probably had the most activity, the most socialized, the most off-the-wall stuff going that you could imagine. It was not a small circle keeping the world out. It was a safe circle that brought the world in, but only in a controlled, regulated way. I don't need to change that. Sometimes things were out of control, but it was still guided. Interesting times. Even some of these spending the night. There was times I would get up 2 or 3 times a night just to go up, make sure everybody was settled, make sure everything was okay, make sure there's no weird noises, you know. But you can only do that if your children are stable enough. When our children were little, some of the things we'd have never done. There were certain seasons of our life that we couldn't do that. Because children mature at different stages, at different ages, and so you need to monitor. Let's say you have 8 children, and there's always a child that's going through a difficult stage. That's difficult. That makes it hard. But you don't violate this principle. If you do, you take the chance of losing them. So let's say you have someone from a liberal background, whether it's a liberal Anabaptist or any other background, but there's a high respect there, and there's a strong bond between your child and you because Jesus is accurately and securely being passed on to your child. You can spend time with them. Now, I probably wouldn't send them on vacation together. If I don't want mine to get addicted to amusement parks, I wouldn't let him go to the, I don't know what the Canada ones are, but like the Disney World and all of that, because that's not where I want my children's hearts. Nothing wrong with an adult going there necessarily for something. That's not what I'm saying. But to shape them into that, let's say I'm one that believes, this might surprise you. No, I'm not serious. It won't. Let's just say I believe that movies can be good, but they can also be negative. And that I would rather not my 12, 15, 16-year-olds think that it's normal to have the boy-girl dating, kissing stuff that you often see on young people's movies. Maybe it's a good family movie, except there's teenagers and they do the mainstream Christianity teenage things. Lots of good movies have those scenes. What we found, just a little nugget here, often movies, when the children are little in the movies, are fine. But once those children turn to teenagers, it changes because that's when they get into the boy-girl stuff. And if you're okay with your youth doing that, thinking that, having impure thoughts, having impure emotions, then sure, let them watch it. But if you actually believe what Jesus says, then don't let them watch it. Otherwise, it'll dull their conscience, and it'll stir their feelings. So let's say you have a liberal friend that highly respects you, and your children could even stay at their house for an overnight, possibly. And they don't violate anything that you believe. And the father's talking about, you know what? I love your dad. I just think he's the greatest dad. And I just love the way he relates to your children. Like he's actually building value in your child. Or let's say he says, hey, we're going to go to town tonight. And I know y'all don't usually do this, but I think for once it'll be fine. He's undermining you. Or let's say they go to the friend's house and they watch a movie that you typically wouldn't watch. Your child is learning. He's learning about holes in a fence, what church standards can do. Again, this isn't about for or against church standards. When we left the church I grew up in, we were looked at as the liberal ones because we were leaving the structure. It wasn't long till the young people from a former church looked at us as the prudes and conservative ones because we actually lived what we believed. They had a rule because we could have movies. That makes us liberal. Their church couldn't have movies unless you were at a cousin's house. And then you went to the cousin's house and you watched movies that weren't fit to watch. But that was fine because nobody said anything about it. And they learned how to cut holes in the fence and crawl through the hole and come back in, brush the dirt off their clothes, everything's fine. And I found it ironic that a lot of the ones that criticized us are way more down the liberal slope than what our family's ever gone. Simply because we decided to live what we believe instead of pretending to live what we believe. The changes in the value system are phenomenal. And sure, maybe there's some entertainment parents can handle that children can't. And when you're gone away from your children, that's up to you in that sense. Children know that parents are adults. But what you bring to your children has to be something that is capable of shaping that foundation solid. Most of the parents I teach this to are not willing to draw these lines in their own circles. I'm going to encourage you to think about this. Do you want your children to be a statistic, which means chances of them leaving what you believe is very high? Or do you want them to embrace what you understand about Jesus? If you shape them, let's say up to, and during the shaping, you're living like Jesus, which is not being a prude. It's not just being strict. You are actually living like Jesus. I wasn't into the wine drinking. You know, he was called a wine bibber. Some people take that as meaning that we should drink with our friends. I'll tell you the simple answer to me. I have a lot of local friends that ask me, said, Freeman, why don't you drink? And these are often from non-Christians. I just look them straight in the eye and say, I have too many friends destroyed by it to introduce it to my children. And I've yet for one to react to that. They all say, wow, that makes sense. I'm driving down the road with a friend of mine. He's older than I am. And he's pointing out a house. Said, you know what? That's where my drinking buddies and I used to hang out. And I'm hanging out with him because he's just separated from his wife because she can't handle his drinking. And we're driving past. And I'm just saying, Lord, I've known him for a while. How can I respond to this? And I said, Wayne, do you think that you and your drinking buddies increased your value of life or decreased the value of life? And he looked a little startled and said, I've never thought about that. And he starts thinking and said, you know what? I think it might have decreased it. He didn't have to be hit over the head. He knows what's right or wrong. But that question sobered him tremendously. He came to church many times. A little funny story on him. I don't know where this came from. I mean, he's a Vietnam vet and was dealing with a lot of issues. We met him at work at the restaurant. And he followed us to church. Camouflage, knee-length breeches and a suit coat sometimes. A little bit of an odd combination there. But the first time he came, he brought his more like a upgraded scooter than a motorcycle, but he had parked it, and our deacon, Tim Croft, came and saw him standing around the corner just watching. I didn't know he was there because he was hiding. And Tim went over and said, hi, what are you doing? What can I do for you? And he said, I just came to see if this church is actually what Freeman said it was. Like, he thought maybe I was making it up. like maybe there wasn't anyone that attended with us, and I was just trying to look important or something. I don't know. But and once he realized it was actually real, he came in and sat down, and for a couple years, until his dementia kicked in and he wasn't able to attend, he attended probably twice a month. He'd come and sit up front. He knew where the good preaching was. It was up front. A lot of y'all haven't figured that out yet. It's difficult for me to make it clear enough that we have to live like Jesus when it comes to relating to sinners. And at the same time, we have to protect our children completely from being confused. Some of you are probably familiar with Faith Christian Fellowship in Ohio. Mark Miller, who's the lead elder there, has done some teaching on family that you can find it on their website. I would strongly encourage you young parents to listen to that. He's much more systematic than I am, and he goes through some teaching, telling you how to deal with teaching your children about the moral values, a child's own sexuality. Very, very good teaching on that, and I'd encourage you to listen to that. But I'm here to tell you that if you live these principles well, it is possible to raise sons and daughters that never get into immorality. In today's culture with all the technical opportunities, with the technology opportunities, it's still possible. The environment today does not change the possibility of living Jesus in a way that reflects clearly to your children. And I want you to take courage in that. But we tend to violate that. We send our children to these good Bible schools where some rebel is that introduced them to pornography. It's that simple. Your child needs to be stable enough to know what's going on and awareness so that he doesn't stumble into that. We send our children to church functions without supervision while they're still struggling. I remember many times, and this is painful for a lot of us, I understand, but maybe there's two church families live close together who are both have children in rebellion, and they hang out together, go on walks together, go on hang out Sunday afternoons, talking about rebellion to their parents. After church, over the years in our church, groups of young people talking about all kinds of evil stuff. Some of that is what changed in the last 15 years of our family. I didn't understand that it was even possible to protect your children from that and still have them well socialized. And if you think they're not well socialized, meet Justin. There has to be value from within. Children cannot. I remember a tent meetings when a local family, come from a hippie background, loved the Lord, came to our church for a while, but now they're not. I remember there was an 8 or 10 year old sitting there just feeling grumpy and disconnected. Remember the dad walking over to him and saying, "You should be reading your Bible like your older brother is. Why don't you sit up and do something spiritual?" Would you be surprised if I told you that the boy joined the army, the military, in the last 2 years? The parents are very disappointed. He had no value at home. That Bible meant nothing to him. All that Bible brought was legalism and condemnation. Why would he want it? This Jesus isn't of value. The older son now ended up as a Catholic priest. He had to go to something that he could understand, something tangible, instead of the living power of Jesus Christ. That confusion from not having a clear countenance, not having that clear, trusting, safe relationship. The fear of being sharply rebuked when you make a mistake. Imagine, as an employee, whenever you'd make a mistake, your boss would just really chew you out. imagine the tension that would put within you. Did I wire that right? Did I put that shingle on right? And your boss said, hey, a customer called from your last job, and it's like you just, your heart gets tied up in knots. Do you understand the feeling? Imagine a 5 or 8 year old living with that. Imagine a 15-year-old who's struggling living with that. They don't do well with it. They have to be able to process it. It has to make sense to them. Young people in today's culture, probably more than ever, will not continue on in things that don't make sense. 100 years ago, 75 years ago, 50 years ago, they did. The hippie movement came through the United States and Canada and England and brought a lot of changes in that way, to where young people felt they needed value, they needed to find themselves. I remember a couple of years ago at the local gas station, I was down there, and the interesting thing was one of the locals there, big white beard, stained with tobacco juice, wasn't the best character man. Anyway, I was chatting with him, and this probably 20-year-old boy with a guitar over his shoulder. We didn't see a lot of these in our area. Guitar on his shoulder, walking on tiptoes with a backpack, went walking by. And this local man, he says, I bet he's trying to find himself. He should just go look in the mirror and he'd see himself. But what he was saying is that the man was looking for value. And he recognized, I was at a chiropractor once, and this young man came in, big beard, he just looked like a, I don't know how to describe him. When he left, the chiropractor said, this man's dad was a preacher. And the boy grew up feeling so worthless, like he could never do anything right. And he's gone completely against what his dad has been teaching. I could show you photos of our dining room table with missionary children. These particular parents were in England as missionaries somewhere. I don't know much about them. We just met them at work. And having those missionary children looking like hippies in a negative way from a biblical perspective, the big earrings and the sitting there at our table talking about why they're not adopting their parents' faith. This is not just an Anabaptist thing. This is a human thing. Think about the fact that other religions do this way better than we do. If you lay the foundation, what did Paul say in Romans? He said, what advantage have the Jew? He said, much in every way. Give your children the advantage. Give them that step up. Give them the platform to stand on. Give them the real Jesus, not the legalism of the do's and don'ts. Sure, it includes some do's and don'ts. Jesus said we have to obey him. Cheerful obedience and open countenance. Let me close with this. I want to ask you to consider believing that your children are shaped by their environment. And if you understand that, and you value your children, you will study your environment, see what your children are going to become. And if you don't like what it is, then change their environment. Doesn't mean you have to leave church. Remember, we grew up through the meltdown and everything. That's how we raised our family. But the value and safety has to be within that circle. Otherwise, your children will become confused, and often as not, they choose someone else's values. God bless you.